Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. Where we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape. Definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in. And recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis, when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really couldn't have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change. Rearrange the game so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go! Turn it up!
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Episode 215, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. I am Chris Featherstone, your host, as always. Follow us at Crave Wrestling. I am here with the greatest general manager on the planet Earth. He's a humble guy. He may not say it, but I'm going to say it for him. It is the Mac Militant, none other than the one, the only, Teddy Long. How are you tonight, sir?
Hey, I'm very good, man. How you doing, man? And first thing I want to say is thank you very much, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to be on your show.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, man. I've been doing this for 4 years now, and 215 episodes, and you were one of the people who always wanted on the show, man, because always I honored your journey from being an errand boy and on the ring crew to having one of the most prominent positions in the WWE, man. It's a great journey. It's a very appreciated journey that you've been through.
Right. Well, thank you very much, man. I kind of congratulate myself on my journey too. You know, it was a long one. It was a lot of struggles on the way up. But with me and good Lord on my side, we was able to accomplish that, live my dream, and was able to make it to the top in professional wrestling, and that's just a blessing. And I thank all the fans that supported me and watched me on TV for all those years I was on in the NWA, WCW, and then I went to the WWE. So a lot of loyal fans out there. I meet them every day, and plus I talk to people a lot on my Facebook and stuff. So I really appreciate all the fan support, and I really congratulate myself on my own journey.
Absolutely. So who would you contribute helping you climb up the ladder in the wrestling business? Is there a few names that really helped you ascend to those positions, from ring crew to referee to, manager, people who really helped you in that climb?
Well, the first person was God. Let's put him number one.
Absolutely.
And the second person, that the guy that gave me my first job, and God rest his soul, and it was Dusty Rhodes.
Mm-hmm.
He gave me the first job. He hired me as a referee. Before I got the that position, before I started managing, after I started refereeing, I started riding with guys like Hot Stuff, Eddie Gilbert, God rest his soul also, and Kevin Sullivan. And in fact, I only sent a shout out to Kevin. I had talked to him about 3 days ago. And I used to ride with these two guys, and I told them about my career. You know, when I was coming up as a teenager, I was a disc jockey on a radio station. So we'd get in the car, and I'd turn the radio down, and I'd start DJing for them, you know, letting them see I could be the DJ and do all that jazz talking. And Kevin and them liked it, and they said, man, we need somebody that can talk. And they were thinking ahead of time. I had no idea that they were, you know, thinking about, you know, having me to be a manager. So him and Eddie Gilbert, Kevin and Eddie, they went to Jim Ross. They presented it to Jim Ross, and Jim Ross took a while there, but he finally liked it and decided on it. And so that's how I got to become a manager. It was because of Kevin Sullivan and Hot Stuff, Eddie Gilbert, and Jim Ross. He was the one that those three guys were basically behind me being the manager. And like I said, not to be a repeat, but Dustin Rhodes gave me my first job as a referee. So I owe a lot of success, you know, to those guys. You know, they were really a big part of it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So who are some people that you remember back in the day that were kind of trying to keep you down? Who are the people who that you noticed that were kind of bad-mouthing you, or people were saying how, you know, people were telling you certain things that they would say about you that would kind of hinder your process of ascending up the ladder? Do you remember any names in particular?
Well, you know, the only person I really basically, you know, well, I had a problem with a few people, you know, but, you know, nothing major, you know, nothing that we, you know, I didn't really even care to talk about. But Ole Anderson was one of the guys, you know, he was, you know, real racist. I mean, you know, it's something that Ole didn't hide, you know, so, I mean, it ain't nothing that, you know, I don't mind talking about it because he didn't care. He didn't hide it. But I wouldn't say that Ole kept me back. I mean, I don't know. I just know he was in charge and that I had some problems with him at the time that I was there. But no major problems, you know. He treated me okay. He wasn't, you know, really such a bad guy as people say he was. I mean, he had his beliefs, and that's what he believed in, and that's what he stuck with. So you find that right now in today's politics, you know.
Yeah.
People that believe in one thing, I don't care what it's been 50 years. If that's what they believe, that's what they're going to go with.
That's true.
So, with Ole, you know, just a little bit of problems there, you know, I had. And then, like I said, I had trouble with Jim Crockett. You know, he had me drive one time. I had to go from Atlanta, Georgia to Richmond, Virginia, and which at that time I had to pay my own gas, you know. And then when I got to the arena there in Richmond, Virginia, Jim Crockett looked at me and asked me, what was I doing there? I said, well, at that time, J.J. was doing the booking, J.J. Dillon, and J.J. would always, you know, was booking the referees and, you know, letting them know where they would need it. And I told him, I said, well, J.J. told me, you know, I was needed here. You guys needed me to work. And Jim Crockett looked at me and told me, well, we don't need you. So, which means I had to drive all the way back home to Atlanta, Georgia, didn't get any money because, I mean, if you didn't work back then, you didn't get paid.
Yeah.
So I had trouble with Jim, you know, them kind of problem with Jim Crockett, you know, and people like him, you know. And like I said, you know, it was just, you know, a lot of people that said, you know, that I didn't have any talent, you know, I never would make it or never would be anything in this business. And I was just happy to be able to prove them wrong. And Vince McMahon was a big part of that. You know, Vince proved all of the naysayers, you know, that I did have talent. So I owe basically all of my success to Vince McMahon and the WWE, because he's the one that discovered me and blew me up and gave me the opportunity that other people refused not to. And Gordon Soley was a good friend of mine, too. And he said to me one time, I never will forget it. He said, I don't know why they won't do more with you. He said, you're wrestling's best kept secret.
Nice.
Gordon told me that. And also, I was a big, another guy that was a big fan of mine was Mr. Barnett. He was one of the promoters back in the day. And he used to always tell me that he was going to always talk to the bookers and see why they wouldn't put me in this position or why they wouldn't do it more with me. So, you know, it was just one of those things, man. You know, you're coming up in the South, and that's just the way the South is. And in some parts of the South, it is that way today.
Now, I've heard from other interviews before that you've mentioned that Jim Barnett gave you the spot because there was a demand as far as Simmons and Reed, there was a demand for more of a black presence and for black champions. Is that go a little bit more into that as far as what was told
Here's what the story was on that. Mr. Barnett and I used to talk all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Barnett just told me one day, he said, Teddy Long, he said, the only reason that we put the belts on you guys is because the NAACP had kept calling and kept asking why did they not have any black champion, why there were no black guys that were champions. So he explained to me that was why they put the belts on us. But we was lucky enough to, after they did put the belts on Butch and Ron, they was lucky enough to be able to carry the belts. I mean, this was a great team.
Yeah.
You know, people started liking us. We started doing very good. And then the other thing, we were doing so good as heels, then somebody else came in and got the book, and they wanted to turn us babyface, you know, kind of kill us off a little bit. Man, they talked about splitting the team up, and then I think they did. They took Ron away from Butch. They tried to push Ron, you know, as a single. Not try. Well, they did push him as a single, which he became the world heavyweight champion. But that's how that was. Mr. Barnett just said the NAACP had been calling, and why they didn't have any black champions. So I guess, you know, they were forced to put the belts on us. But in the end, I think they made the right decision.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Doom was one of the most dominant tag teams. I remember watching Doom as a kid, 89, 90, feuding against the Steiner Brothers and destroying the Midnight Express. So, yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah. We had a lot of good times. We worked with a lot of teams, the Road Warriors. You know, we had a big feud with them.
Yep.
At one time, you know, like you said, Rock and Roll Express, Midnight Express. I mean, everybody that they put us on, and our biggest deal was with the Steiners.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where we defeated them and at Capital Combat, a pay-per-view that was in Washington, D.C., and that's when they became the Black World Tag Team Champions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, and, definitely mention of the Rock and Roll Express, too, destroying the Rock and Roll Express. I was a Rock and Roll Express fan as a kid. I was more of a Steiners fan, but Rock and Roll Express is one of my teams. And so they definitely played very well heels by just taking out the Rock and Roll Express like that. It just didn't seem like it was any type of chance. But, it was great heel tag team. So about a couple of years later, like you said, Ron Simmons became the first Black World Heavyweight Champion. Now, the same type of deal as far as them needing, you know, a more of a black presence? Or was it just Bill Watts seeing the talent and seeing the opportunity in Ron Simmons to anoint him with that title because he deserved it?
Well, it could be both of those. You know, I'm pretty sure that Bill, one thing I knew about Bill, you know, he did, you know, he wouldn't do anything with you unless you really deserved it. You know, he was an old school promoter, and that's how it worked back in the day. You know, when you got a break, you deserve that break.
Yeah.
So I think it was probably that too, and I'm pretty sure it was probably the other way around too. They probably just wanted a black face on that TV, because I was told this, and I don't know how true this is, but I was told that when I first got the referee job, when Dusty hired me for that job, and I started refereeing, I kept that job for so long because they said Ted Turner, you know, enjoyed watching me. He wanted this black referee on his TV. Mm-hmm. Now, that's what I was told. I don't know whether that was true or not. But anyway, I think with Ron Simmons, I think, you know, Bill Watts saw the opportunity there and saw that he was deserving of being that. And then maybe that could have probably still been going on, you know, Forrest Turner, you know, and the NAACP or whoever it was, you know, they may have been, you know, continuing to, you know, show them, you know, yeah, that there are some black guys here that are qualified and capable of being, of representing the company and being the world heavyweight champion and the world tag team champion.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Now, do you think that Vince would kind of have that same type of notion if, you know, he had a few black, you know, stockholders and shareholders saying, hey, we need a black presence? Who do you think right now that Vince will be able to use as that champion to be in the forefront? Can you think of any black wrestler right now?
Well, here's the thing, I think, with Vince. I don't think Vince would do something because somebody told him, you don't have no black champion, you need to get a black champion on TV. Vince don't work like that.
Mm-hmm.
Vince will give a black guy the opportunity if he, you know, if he deserves that opportunity. And Vince looks at it like this. Vince looks at it like the dollar. You know, if you're a black guy, you black as coal. If you can draw Vince some money, he's going to put you out there to draw him. Mm-hmm. And you can, if you go back to the Ahmed Johnson situation, you know, back when he was in the WWF, you know, he was in a great spot. And he and Vince, I was told that Vince really liked him, and Vince was going to, you know, have him be the world champion and put him in a big position, but he screwed that up himself.
That's a good point.
A lot of times, guys, you know, and I'm not trying to be racist or say nothing about my race, but a lot of times I've been in this business a long time, and a lot of times black guys, I've seen they're just as humble as they can be until they get a push. Mm-hmm. And once they get a push and start getting on TV, then they go to acting stupid, you know, acting like the man needs them and they don't need the job. Mm-hmm. Well, you got to understand, this promotion belongs to Vince. This is his company. You can't come in here just because you done got on top and you feel like you can draw some people. Now you're going to tell the man to put you on top and give you the opportunity to get in this position. You're going to tell him what to do.
Right.
So that's what happens with a lot of guys. And if you ever get a chance to talk to Tony Atlas, he's the guy that will tell you that, because me and him rode together for a while. And he was very honest with me about his situation. You know, he told me, he said, man, I had too much too soon. And I just didn't know what to do with it. And I messed myself up. And that's what can happen to you. You know what I mean? You can mess yourself up. And that's what Tony did. And there are a lot of other guys that did that. You know, they won't confess it and say that's what it was. They'll blame it on Vince or say that, you know, he just got rid of them and didn't want to use them or whatever. But it's not like that, man. It's up there. If you can draw the man some money, you can make money, then you're fine.
Yeah.
You know, but when, you know, everybody has their day. You know, when your day or your time's up, your time's up. You know, it's just as simple as that. And I can't see why anybody would balk against being released. If you know, just look at me. I was there 15 years. Now, what would I look like being somewhere, you know, trashing Vince and trashing the company? And he kept me there for 15 years. And I worked on top of on 15 years. I worked on top, general manager, all three companies. So how can I make somebody believe that these people are racist or believe that they was using the black man wrong, and when I was in that position for that long time? So it would just be stupid for me to do that. But
yeah.
I, you know, like I said, you know, some guys will just they forget where they come from, man. You know, not only the black guys, I've seen a lot of white guys too. You know, that'll trash the company. I look back at them, you know, well, hey man, if I hadn't been for the best, you know, you wouldn't be where you are. So I don't understand what's the problem.
Yeah. That's a great approach, man. I mean, that's well respected. I think that's a great way to really look at the business, you know, from a mature standpoint. A lot of people don't have that maturity that you're speaking of right now, and I really appreciate that. So, yeah, you mentioned Ahmed Johnson. That's a really good point, too, because I remember him having a really sizable push when he first came in, become an Intercontinental Champion. You know, there were some rumors that he was scheduled to, you know, go against The Undertaker and start a program with him. So, yeah, you're definitely right about that. Now, as far as any type, what one black wrestler do you see right now that has the potential to become a star and a world champion?
Well, I think it would be Big E.
I like that
choice. I think, you know, and I've said this before, I think he's just in the wrong role. I don't see him being with this new day or with this group. You know what I mean? You look at him, he's got a great look, and plus this guy's a young guy. You know, you can get 10 more years, you know, out of him, you know? And like I said, he's got a great attitude. I had a chance to work with him too, man. He's just as nice as you could be. I mean, he's the kind of guy that, you know, the promoter would want to work with, because he doesn't give you any problems. Whatever you ask him to do, he has no problem doing it. You know, he's a company man, and that's what you have to be. So if I think if they would take him and pull him away from that group and just put him on his own, you know, I think he would be your next, you know, not saying he should, you know, copy anybody, but he would be your next Mark Henry. And I think Mark Henry, the rumor has it that he's getting ready to retire. You know, he's getting out of the ring, so why wouldn't you groom Big E to take Mark Henry's spot? I think he would be the perfect guy to be your next star.
Yeah. Now, would you make him a baby face or a heel?
Well, I would make him a baby face at the beginning, you know what I mean? And this kind of run we can get out of that, because you look at it, you know, they don't really have a real good black baby face. I think Titus O'Neil, I think he's in a maybe a baby face role, but I just, you know, like I said, I just like to see Big E. You know, I think he understands this business a lot better than Titus O'Neil.
Yeah.
And I think Big E would be the guy, you know, that would be able to carry, you know, whatever position that they put him in, he'd be able to carry himself.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's kind of the way I look at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I've been a big, strong supporter of Big E for quite some time. Many of my friends and followers of the show the past 4 years, you know that I always speak, you know, highly of Big E. He's one of my favorite wrestlers, actually. The New Day is so red hot right now and so, you know, on fire, you know, it'll be tough to break them away. But at the same time, you know, like you said, everything comes to an end. And I think that, you know, when the New Day fix and when the New Day high, you know, comes to an end, I think there'll be a very good opportunity to use for Big E. He's been Intercontinental Champion as a babyface, and, you know, he was pretty over. I think he has an opportunity as well to be world champ.
Well, the thing I would do, and you know, if it was me to pull him away from him, is I would have him to start taking the tag team situation more serious.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm looking at them, you know, these are the WWE tag team champions. And to me, I don't think that they're taking them, you know, they're not portraying them as serious champions. You know, there's a lot of entertainment in the game, and there's a lot of ha-ha, you know, from them. And I just, you know, I guess maybe times are changing. You know, maybe that's what it is. Because as long as I can remember, the world championship, the world title, and the tag team titles were serious. You know, were serious positions to be in. When you have those belts, you know, I think if it was me, I'd have Big E to maybe sit down and be catching somewhere, you know, just in a, you know, thinking to himself, and, you know, and just wondering, you know, hey, why am I doing this? You know, why is this so, you know, I should be taking this more serious. And maybe he got into it with the guys, you know, and tell them, hey, man, come on, let's get away. Get away from the instruments and all that stuff. Realize we're the champs, man. We got, you know, something along that line, you know, and that's the way I would kind of pull him away, is that the other two guys didn't want to be serious. They still want to entertain, and Big E wants to be serious.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. Definitely can see that. I appreciate the fantasy on the spot booking, and I like it. So,
yeah, I mean, who knows? I mean, you know, it's like, what do I know? You know, but I'm just saying that that's kind of the way, you know, I would pull him away and so you can make him more serious. There's no sense in putting him out there on his own.
Yeah.
He's not going to be a serious character, because with the look that he's got to be serious.
Very true. Absolutely. So we talked about your ascension from manager to general manager. How did that all come about? What was it about Teddy Long that was chosen by Vince McMahon to say, hey, listen, this is going to be the person that's going to be the general manager? Because if I'm not mistaken, you succeeded Stephanie McMahon, correct?
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. And I don't really know how this happens. And I'm being honest with you. You know, one time I remember I came out, I did a promo, and I think the promo was on Tommy Dreamer when I walked out with D'Lo Brown. And I think that was the first time Vince had the opportunity to see my skills and to see I could really talk. And so I remember coming back into the gorilla position where Vince was sitting, and he called me over and he said to me, he said, I can't believe I had you ready under my nose all this time.
Wow.
And the general manager spot was something that they didn't ever tell me ahead of time that I was going to be the general manager. Nobody came and said, well, this is the idea, this is what we're thinking about, or this is the direction that we're going to go in. You know, you're going to be general manager. Nobody told me nothing. All I did is I walked in one day, and I guess maybe an hour before TV, before we got ready to go on, the writers came to me and told me, you're going to be general manager tonight. Vince is going to make you general manager. And so, to me, I was nervous as I could be. I mean, real nervous, because I'm like, Jesus Christ, I ain't never been in this position here before. And I already understood, you know, working for Vince, you don't play. You know, you got to, you know, be able to get out there, and you got to be able to perform.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just, you know, to me, I'm looking at it, this was a big responsibility here, but I can't say no.
Right.
I can't tell them, no, I don't want to be the general manager. That free can't be given to somebody else, you know. So I just, you know, when they told me, I just thought about it, and I'm like, hey, you know, I'm off and running. And mm-hmm. that's exactly how that happened. I had no idea.
Wow, that's fantastic. So what would you say your best and your worst time as general manager is?
Well, I all of the times were good for me. I think that the worst time is at the end, you know, after when, you know, they couldn't make up their mind whether they wanted to continue to keep me in that spot, or they had talked about me turning heel and turning on Booker. They were going to give it to Booker, and then I was going to turn on him, and we had some stuff that was going to start from there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, every time, you know, they just kept, you know, saying different things, and everything that they said, you know, wasn't coming true. It wasn't actually happening. So I think that was kind of the bad time.
Yeah.
But all the times I was in that position, I had great times. I had good chemistry with everybody that I worked with. So I enjoyed everything that I'd done, especially with the deal with me and the Undertaker where he kidnapped me and I was in the coffin and all that stuff.
Yep.
I enjoyed that, and I really enjoyed working with Vicky Guerrero. What a great person, man, and a nice lady. And, you know, we were so good together too. You know, actually a lot of things that she did to me, off screen, you know, I talked to her and I told her, you know, here's what I want you to do to me tonight. You know what I mean? Because I knew the position that I was in. I knew that people wanted to see me back in that position. So a lot of times, a lot of stuff, when Vicky did things for me, I didn't even talk. I just looked it. You know, you could look at my expression on my face, and I could tell you, now, okay, like one day, Vicky. You know,
yeah, yeah.
So you could see it in my face. So I was able to, you know, that's how I was able to get my character over, because my character was me. You know, I wasn't putting on the air. What I walked out and said on TV, I talked in everyday life. I call people players today.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it. Everything I said, it just came from me. So I had a lot of good times. Everything that I did as general manager and I was involved in, I enjoyed every minute of it.
That's awesome. Greatly that, and you did a fantastic job, man. It was such a great time to see that long time that you were general manager. It was to me, it was really the flavor and the spice that SmackDown needed to kind of cut it above, you know, cut it different and make it different than Raw. I think one of the problems that we see right now is that SmackDown isn't different from Raw. There's not much of a difference. There's a more of a wrestling element per se sometimes. But at the same time, it just now it's gotten to a point there's more of an extension of Raw, and it really doesn't have an identity. I think when you were general manager, SmackDown really had an identity that really made people want to watch it on Thursday nights or Friday nights, you know, interchangeably whenever day it came on. So definitely major kudos to you for that. So there was an angle that was going on with you and Crystal Marshall. Now, was that planned? Now, what we saw on the screen, was that planned the way that it was supposed to? Or were there a bunch of audibles, different audibles called throughout the angle that we saw? Because, I mean, there's rumors that Crystal didn't want to marry Edge, and Vicky was a person, and Crystal with you. And there's a bunch of just rumors going around as far as and different stories going around as far as how the angle was supposed to be. Now, do you recall... What was supposed to be?
Yeah, well, what the angle was supposed to be is that after I had the heart attack, that Vicky and Crystal were supposed to take over. They were supposed to start running SmackDown, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to be gone for a while, you know, just like, well, we really did it again, and we did it again with Vicky and Dolph Ziggler. But the first of it is Vicky and Crystal were supposed to be running the show. I was going to be gone for a while, and then they were going to run it till we really run it in the ground. And then I was going to make the big comeback and come back and take over SmackDown again. But what happened, I think, with Crystal, I think she was dating Bobby Lashley at
yep.
the time.
Yep.
And so at the time, you know, we're doing this deal on SmackDown that we're together and we're supposed to be getting married and, you know, everything is supposed to be, you know, real. You know, you're supposed to protect, you know, what you're doing on TV. And she didn't do that. She started going to Raw and waiting on Bobby. And then when everybody at the end when people were leaving, they see her leaving with Bobby Lashley. So, you know, she just exposed everything. You know, she's supposed to be marrying me. And like I said, she didn't really protect the storyline and what we were doing on TV. So that's kind of way, that's where it went, you know, where it went sour at was right there. But the way it was supposed to be, it was her and Vicky supposed to take over, and I was supposed to make the comeback and run SmackDown. So like I said, we just redid it again when Vicky started dating Dolph, and they found me in the office. I was on the floor where somebody had knocked me out or whatever it was, and then they took me out, and then Vicky and Dolph started running it, and then remember I came back in Sacramento and I took it back.
Yeah, great. So lastly, I have a long list of wrestlers that you have managed, and they include Mark Jindrak, Jazz, Mark Henry, Rosie, Chris Nowinski, Rodney Mack, D'Lo Brown, Ice Train, Bobby Eaton, Jim Powers, Hard Work, Bobby Walker, Sergeant Craig, Pitbull, Pittman, Joey Maggs, Marcus Alexander Bagwell, of course we talked about Doom, Too Cold Scorpio, One Man Gang, Johnny B. Bad, Norman Lunatic, and the Skyscrapers, which is me, Mark Callis, and Dangerous Danny Spivey. So who would you say is the worst person you managed, in your opinion, and then follow it by the best person you believe you managed?
Man, that's a lot of guys there. The best person, man, I mean, everybody was really good. You know, Butch and Ron, I'd have to definitely throw their name out there. But when I had the team of Danny Spivey, Sid Vicious, you know, they were great. Mark Mero was great. I think probably, I just don't know. The worst person that I could have managed, Jesus Christ, probably was Bagwell, I guess. You know, maybe, you know, because he was hard to get along with at the time with me, him, and Scorpio, you know. You know, like I said, he wasn't real totally bad, but he was just hard to get along with. So I just can't say that anybody that I managed was real bad. Nobody was basically any memories I would have would just probably be a bad one. That probably would be it. But anybody else that I had great chemistry with everybody. I wish I knew what Hard Work Bobby Walker was today. We haven't seen him, God, I guess, in 15 or 20 years, but. You know, I wonder whatever happened to him, but he was a great guy, and I'm just sorry, you know, that he didn't make it in the business. But other than that, man, everybody that I managed, I you know, they were good. I was happy with everybody.
Yeah, Bobby Walker had a really good look to him too. I agree with you. I've past few years, I've been doing some digging and trying to figure out where he is, and so I'm gonna keep digging, man. I'm gonna when I find out, and hopefully I'll get a interview with him, and I'll connect you two together, and you know, so y'all can catch up. So that would be
yeah, I'd appreciate that, man, because I think about him all the time. You know, he was a great guy. I wanted to know whatever happened to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Teddy, it's been a pleasure. I really appreciate your time. So before we go, let everybody know what you're up to now.
Well, you know, if you want to keep up with Teddy Long now, you can go to my website. I'm at teddylong.com. You can follow me on Twitter, and that is at Teddy Player Long, and my Instagram is Teddy Long Wrestling. And this Saturday night, I'm going to be in Barnesville, Georgia, with Wrestle America. That's with Luke Gallus and Stevie Richards. He'll be on that show. Next week on the 26th of May, I'm going to be in Ringo, Georgia, for Wrestle Jam 4. I'll be there with a bunch of WWE Hall of Famers. The Nature Boy Ric Flair is on that card. Ron Simmons, Kevin Nash, also Jim Cornette. He's going to be on that show. And on the 28th of May, I'm going to be down in New Orleans with Wildcat Sports with my man Luke Hawk. Man, I love him. I was with him back in the day when he was first starting out. And he one of those guys that paid his dues, and he struggled, brother. Believe me, he paid his dues, and it all paid off. Now he's running his own company, and, brother, it's outstanding, and I'm just happy to be a part of it, and I'm happy to be going to work this month down in New Orleans. And like I said, other places that I'm going to be, you can find it on the website or just follow me on Twitter, and you can keep up with everything I'm doing, player.
That's awesome. Staying young, staying busy, that's the way to go, man. Really appreciate your time, Teddy.
Hey, I appreciate you having me, man, and thank you so much. And if you need me again, man, feel free to holler, bro.
Sounds good. Have a good one.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Bring what you got. The measuring stick just changed around here, buddy. You're looking at it.
Four corners, free, our mind. Let's go. The whole squad is making it clear we've taken this year. You know who we are, but you don't know why we're here. So this is where the big boys play. These big boys play like who defies the living God? Get out the big boys' way. Outsiders with the swoop in. We live as kings, you see in us. But our third man waits in the wings. And when the time is right, we shock him with the proper attack. I go for Dolo, but ain't solo. Cut the promo in black. Hollywood, Hendrix, Frizzle, pinning them to the mat.
And I'm that one mission with the strength of 100 men, with one intent to see the will fulfilled of the one who sent his son to give himself. But you rap about your gas and your rags torture, white coffins when I drop a bomb. My mic's awesome, never lost faith. You in all space, you can all skate, suffer but never crippled. No bin walls in my cross face. From here to Saturday, raving, anticipating. I was frostbit, now I am glacier, mixed with some Vader. Get to hawking with these animals. Using God for my defense in Alabama, we jamming. That's beautiful, Bobby Eaton, me and Priest. We the dangerous alliance, nah, the Harlem Heat. Tie the do-rag before we do battle. You're talking sheep, you all what you speak. This too sweet.
Till the genre is took back, we reppin' that work pack. The foundation shaking, no mistaking, yeah, we shook that. Plus in God we trust, pushing forward, never look back. Meekness ain't at all weakness, some people mistook that. Stamping out this crook rap, he turned the power on the razor's edge, leg drop after a power bomb. Tired of the lies, man, we bringing the truth through. Diligent and fruitful, the owners in our group too. It's good to be king, sold out, this war is brutal.
We playing them war games, our army go move too. You crew, I'm in the Raptors with a bat in my hand, and stand to shatter all your plans so they don't matter. In the grand scheme, it's that easy. We tag teaming, Steiner brothers, we love it. Demand the win, establish it. This is the clash of the champions.
This is where the big boys play, huh? We ain't here to play.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you once again for tuning in to the Teddy Long interview. Awesome, awesome stuff going on with Teddy Long. Still, he's keeping young, he's keeping fresh. And wonderful, wonderful stories to share, as I certainly expected. It was incredible. So, without further ado, here's the thing, and I appreciate everyone who listens to this show, and I appreciate everyone who continues to support through Facebook, through Twitter, through Facebook Live. I'm having some wonderful interaction there, so... You know, I've been doing this thing for 4 years. I've been writing. I've been a journalist for quite some time. And I have, you know, when you put in the work and when you have an opportunity to really have a passion to do this, opportunities come knocking to you. And I'm so thankful that I'm able to write for Sports Illustrated and Fox Sports. Awesome opportunities there. So I talked yesterday. I had a phone conversation, and I was invited to be a featured co-host on WrestleZone Daily today. So I was excited. Nick and I, we talked on the phone, went over some things. We both were just really excited about just meshing together and you know, having a wonderful time talking about wrestling. So I was away from my office, and my office studio, the studio is my office. My office is my studio. And so I go inside, I go into my office, my studio, get everything ready, and all of a sudden, my computer freezes. I was scheduled to be on 12:30. Computer freezes, get that taken care of. I get on, the method of how I was supposed to be called on. It says available. I'm sitting there waiting and waiting and waiting for a call. I responded to an email, and just technical difficulties. What ended up happening was I believe that I had to make Skype a extension on my computer because I use it on U-Skype. And so it was shown the entire time when I logged into Skype. It was shown the entire time I was available. And then by the time, you know, I had an opportunity to come, it was like 10 minutes to 1. The show was about to be off. So I just really want to publicly apologize. I really thought that I was had everything set. I was ready. It was like 12:25. I was ready to get on live. As you know from this show, I absolutely love talking about wrestling. I love talking about wrestling, and that's what I do. I mean, that's what I have such a fun time doing. It's such medication at times. And I love it, absolutely love it. So when I have an opportunity to be on shows like WZ Daily, it's really a pleasure for me. Yeah, I've done, you know, I got a nice long resume of stuff that I've done and I've achieved and I've written. But every single time, you know, every single opportunity I'm humbled by and I appreciate. So I definitely want to apologize for everyone who was looking forward to see me or to hear me on WZ Daily. I had a lot of stuff to talk about, of course, and it was great. It would have been a great opportunity to share what I had to share on an afternoon format. I usually do what I do on a nightly basis, but it would have been great to share on the afternoon. This is, you know, this relationship that I have with WrestleZone Daily really didn't start off with a good note because of technical difficulties, but we have opened up the relationship again to for me to be on to be back on there soon. So again, apologies to Nick and company, apologizes to the WZ Daily listeners who was expecting for me to be there because I was advertised. I even advertised myself being on there because I was all intentions to be there. I was ready. I was locked and loaded, but I guess I wasn't loaded. So again, my apologies to that, and looking forward to redeeming myself to all of you listeners and talk some wrestling here coming soon. All right, so let's get to Raw. We get the Jericho highlight reel and in-ring promo interrupted by Big Cass. The two exchange words, and Cass gets the better of Y2J. Big boots him in the face. I'm just going to go through Raw, and then we'll get back into it in depth afterwards. The flavor of the week is ranking the Teddy Long managed wrestlers. And Teddy did, you know, as you listened on an interview, Teddy talked about his worst and his best person that he's managed. So we're going to rank the people that he's managed from worst to best. And just, you know, simply from the success level and how it helped him as a manager and how it propelled the person or people that he managed, how he was propelled or how they were propelled. So that's really the basis of the ranking. So Big Cass interferes the highlight reel. I think it really gave Big Cass a really good opportunity to really be thrust into that main event spot. And I like it. It's really kind of like a blessing in disguise for Big Cass that Enzo is gone. You know, it sucks for Enzo because, you know, he had such an amazing, amazing mouthpiece. However, here's the good news. I really think that they can keep this Big Cass being a singles wrestler, and when Enzo comes in, and when he comes back from his injury, I know they're probably going to do the tag team thing, but he's excelling so much as a singles competitor that they really need. I think it'll be a wonderful idea for them to bring Enzo in as a manager. I really think you still can do the whole "my name is Enzo Amore, and I am a certified bona fide G and a certified G and a bona fide stud, and you can't teach that," et cetera, et cetera. And that would continue to, you know, wow the crowd, and Big Cass would be the singles competitor. I think it would really, really help Cass's singles push. And, you know, this is a concussion. So as we've seen from many different wrestlers, you really can't rebound as much as possible, as much as you want from a concussion. We've even seen it with Dolph Ziggler. You know, ever since, you know, he got the concussions a couple of years ago, he's been in mediocre feuds, but he's either putting someone over or he's just being in just really mid-card. He's never broke the ceiling again to be that world champion figure. He hasn't done it. And, of course, we saw with Daniel Bryan and so forth. So it's really tough rebounding from a concussion, and I think that Enzo Amore would be able to be a really, really good managerial role in that. Kudos to Jericho, though, for really doing what he can to put over Cass. I think it's really good. I think, you know, I Jericho's one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, that goes without saying. But I criticize Jericho, and I've been very – I do that heavily because I'm not happy. I'm not impressed with the overall resume, win-loss resume, and really putting people over. You know, I've said this before. You have to – in order to put people over, you have to be over. And in order to be over, you have to strongly build your character, win matches, draw that heat, make people – hate the fact that you're winning, hate what you have to say, all that heat that's being built, then you put it over someone who is a babyface. That's from a heel. I've said that before. And Jericho, you know, his win-loss record isn't impressive enough to really strongly put someone over. We saw that with Dean Ambrose. Dean Ambrose beat Chris Jericho, and he's still feuding with Chris Jericho. Well, I mean, what else is there left to feud? So hopefully he does something good for Big Cass coming in a few weeks. Corbin defeats Ziggler. I think that was a good idea. You know, losing against Ziggler his first match on pay-per-view, absolutely horrible idea. Like I said, these win-loss trades are such a horrible way to consistently build someone. That deep six was absolutely sick. It's really hard for me to see how he got out of that deep six. I think I've seen it before in NXT that it's a signature move, but there's times where I've seen that people have actually took the fall from the deep six. And man, I like the End of Days, but that deep six, it's nice. And when it was executed on Dolph Ziggler, it was something special. It was really, really something special. R-Truth defeating Fandango. I've said this on Facebook Live. I'm less critical about this than normal, than most, I would even say. Can everybody vie for the world championship all at once? And that's my theory. Can everybody vie for a mid-card title all at once? So you have all these people on a roster, and instead of having, you know, this person wrestle a couple main events here and there, and this person wrestling a couple superstars, and most likely putting someone a little bit more important than them over, I mean, might as well. Goldust is a vet. R-Truth, he's a vet. He's been in there for a while. I'd be totally okay if this leads to R-Truth and Goldust finally getting together, and then Fandango and Tyler Breeze becoming a tag team. I think those two tag teams are fine. I really do. It gives Tyler Breeze something to do. It finally gives Fandango a viable spot, because he's been just in and out and unimportant for so long. So it gives them opportunity. I'm okay with it. Yeah, it may, the feud might have went or maybe going a little bit too long. Yeah, possibly, probably. However, it still gives them an opportunity to do something, to be something other than just putting people over. So I'm not as critical of it as most. Paige defeating Charlotte. Why does this happen? Paige isn't going to be a part of the title picture. The only thing that I can think of is Paige being the tag team partner of Becky Lynch with the whole Emma and Dana Brooke thing, and we'll talk about that. That's the only thing that I can think of what made sense here. Charlotte beating Paige by disqualification, or Paige beating Charlotte by disqualification, would have made much more sense because of that. I mean, because of the fact that it just, her losing doesn't make any sense. It really does not make any sense at all for her to take a pin 2 weeks before, well, actually, what? Yeah, 2 weeks, a little less than 2 weeks before the pay-per-view, taking a pinfall to someone who has not been relevant in the WWE for 8-9 months. Unfortunately, because Paige has talent, but she hasn't been relevant for quite some time. And to have her beat Charlotte, and I've said this before, pinning champions on regular programming is just such a lousy, lackluster way to really continue steam. You're the champion. Why are you losing to some random person? I don't care if you were distracted or not. You're the champ. You shouldn't be losing matches against just people. Just random people on Raw or SmackDown for the sake of making you look less than the person that you're going to beat at the pay-per-view. That's not a way to build steam. A way to build steam is to have the heel continue to win and say, you know what, I think he'll probably win at the pay-per-view. And then the toss-up is the heel still going to win at the pay-per-view because he's been winning all these weeks or she's been winning all these weeks? Or is it, you know what, I really want this person to lose. I want them to lose. So whoever beats this person, perfect. I'm on their team. However, you get the people lose, you get the heels losing throughout the weeks, and just makes absolutely no sense. And another thing, and another heel losing like that, a couple times. Charlotte lost, and then the whole Flair comes out Shane, and then after that, another champion loses in The Miz, and Sami Zayn's now part of the four-way, the Intercontinental title match at Extreme Rules. Okay, so it would have been much more, it would have been much more believable, or it made it much more sense for someone like Sami Zayn to be a stronger character and winning a handicap match. That would have really strengthened his character. Just throw a couple people to him. I know that, Connor's the one that's suspended. So you still got Victor around. Someone like Victor. Someone like Del Rio, Sheamus. A couple people. Somebody just not very relevant in the mid-card scene. Give it to them. How about Stardust and Victor? Then they have the Cosmic Wasteland, so they've teamed up before. So Stardust and Victor, those are two people who aren't really doing much. Team them up, handicap match against Sami Zayn. He defies the odds. That's good enough to become, a contender for the Intercontinental title. Don't have him beat the champion. It doesn't help The Miz. Yeah, he'll probably win at the pay-per-view, but so what? Build him up to be a strong heel. He should be winning up to the pay-per-view and win the pay-per-view. Because you're setting him up for that babyface to beat him. Come on! Logic here. Storyline building here. Come on. And then we see it again with Sin Cara beating Rusev. I've spoke positively about Sin Cara, but oh man, why would you have him beat Rusev? Pin him. If you beat him by DQ, possibly. If you beat him by count out, okay, possibly. Those things can fly. But pin him? You pin Rusev, someone who was undefeated for 9 months, loses against Sin Cara, who hasn't been built strongly since he's got there. And that's really sad. I guess he was built up a little bit when he first got there. He beat Daniel Bryan. But so did Barrett when Barrett wasn't being built strongly either. So, yeah, again, there's your booking there. Lack of building characters. And, you know, just chasing around Kalisto like he's a little cockroach. Ah, man. What a way to make your U.S. title relevant. The number one contender loses a match against his tag against the champion's tag team partner, who with him loses more matches than they win. Please, someone help me with understanding that. Then we got Roman Reigns and the Usos defeating AJ Styles, Anderson, and Gallows by DQ. This was cool. This was fun and exciting. I think they're building this fairly well. I'm expecting the payoff to be something different than AJ Styles officially or really being with Anderson and Gallows. I think we'll probably get a Finn Balor call up at Extreme Rules. That would be interesting. And then the club. You could have been called anything else in this entire nation. In this entire galaxy, you could have been called Donald Trump. That would have been better than the club. You could have been called Hillary Clinton. That would have been better than the club. The club? I said this on my Facebook Live. I feel like I'm being protected. I feel like I'm protecting cars. If I'm in a faction called the club, I should be like the union. Remember the union? They would come out with their 2x4s. I'm in a faction called the club. I should bring out clubs. I should bring those back from like 1993. And I should bring a club device out to the ring. Heck, might as well. Just lace it all up. It should be a part of the gear. It should be a part of everything. Just the club. I'm a part of the club. Oh. Absolutely ridiculous. Speaking of a better name, the Bullet Club, Adam Cole Bay, Adam Page, newest additions to the Bullet Club. Kudos to those decisions. I'm interested to see where that goes. I think both of them are interesting additions. Adam Cole, you know, he broke away from the Kingdom a few weeks ago in ROH. Matt Taven kicked him out. Seemed like he might have been taking the babyface route, kind of. But nope, he realized that no, I'm better heel. I'm just a slimy guy. But you know, I think one of these days he'll have a good face run because, like I said before, you got all the fans coming out and chanting Adam Cole Bay. That's a babyface move. As far as Adam Page, I think it's good for him, too. I think he's a rising star. Good hand for ROH. Kind of played the babyface role, and it was, you know, he had the potential to be a good babyface, but they weren't doing too much with him. You know, him and the BJ Whitmer thing kind of ran its course. Now BJ can focus back on Carino. So it was good for Adam Page, too. Both of them fit the look of the Bullet Club. So I'm very interested to see where that goes. But on WWE, you have the club. You have the car protecting device, the club. Oh, man. Absolutely no sense. And then, you know, you had the Bulletproof. You know, of course, I'd imagine Balor Club. When Balor comes up, please change it to Balor Club. Hopefully this is only a temporary thing, and it's even tough to endure if it's temporary. What a horrible name for a faction that's supposed to be and look and sound and seem dominating, the club. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you AJ Styles, Luke Gallows, and Carl Anderson, the club. Sorry. All right, next we have Kevin Owens defeating Zack Ryder. This was given. This was certainly given. I think that's probably the best word for it, was given. Because I really don't understand why Zack Ryder is even still on the main roster. He should go back to NXT. They should relive the Hype Bros. I mean, the Hype Bros were on NXT last week, I think it was, a week or two ago. So the Hype Bros still are alive. But I, you know, take him back to NXT. He's not going to have any type of relevance again. It just, for some reason, it just seems as if that Intercontinental title win was a knee-jerk reaction to, like, oh, yeah, there's no way that Zack Ryder's going to win. He's a replacement to Neville. No way. But, yes way, he won the Intercontinental title. I was very, very apprehensive of it. Very. Because I just knew that they weren't going to push Zack Ryder to that Intercontinental title level. And I keep saying over and over again, I will continue to say this from then until now, until forever, champions should not make people. Champions should not make wrestlers. Wrestlers should make champions. Or titles should not make wrestlers. Wrestlers should make titles. I'm not going to throw a title on you and expect for you to be a new level of important. No, absolutely not. No. It's ridiculous to think something different. However, for some reason, I'm supposed to believe that putting a title on someone is somehow supposed to convince me to believe that they're more important than what they were. No. Absolutely, positively not. No, 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 no. And we have that with Zack Ryder. He's Intercontinental Champion. What did that do to him? Nothing. What status was he before he won the Intercontinental title? Very low. He was making some noise in NXT. The Hype Bros were important. I like the Hype Bros. I think they're good. And I've said this before. I even said it on Facebook Live yesterday. There's certain gimmicks that should stay on NXT, because you have that alternative culture, you have that indie-ish culture, and they should just stay on NXT. Tyler Breeze should have stayed on NXT. That gimmick has a very short shelf life. The Vault Villains should have stayed on NXT. That gimmick has a very short shelf life. Even Bo Dallas, that gimmick never got over. It was just weird from the beginning on main roster. This guy, this weirdly positive guy who's a heel, and he's not intimidating looking, but he's on a streak. He's on a winning streak. But his winning streak are against, like, mid-carders, you know. I think one of his – I know he would be R-Truth a few times, but I don't remember. I have to look up his streak when he first got there. when I have time. It's not worth doing now. But there's certain people that should really stay on NXT. Really should. And there's certain people who've been caught up too fast. Apollo Crews, who we did not see at all on Raw. Oh, man, it's tough to endure. If I'm Apollo Crews, I'm looking at Tyler Breeze, I'm looking at the Ascension, and I'm like, oh, boy, this doesn't look good. Probably look good on his paycheck, though. Yeah, you're financially, yeah, there's a financial promotion, yeah. Does that overshadow your peace of mind? So we'll see. So Dana Brooke comes up. Dana Brooke has debuted on Raw. Now you have Bayley, you have Nia Jax, you have Asuka. You have all of these NXT potential call-ups here. Carmella is another one. Perfect. I mean, Carmella and Cass together, they're dating. They might as well. So why would you not have those... What's the girl from Jersey? I don't remember her name. She wrestles NXT, and she has the 301 jersey. I don't remember her name. It'll probably pop up. But you know, she has potential. But man, I don't quite understand how you're bringing someone like Dana Brooke up. That's Liv Morgan. That's her name, Liv Morgan. She has potential. She's a better wrestler than Dana Brooke is. But there's so much. I mean, she plays a good heel. The whole pat on the top of the head. At least that's some type of signature something. Okay, I get that, and I'm okay with that. At least it's something. At least it's some type of signature. However, it doesn't make any sense to bring up Dana Brooke, and she really, really needs to improve in the ring. She's not horrible, but she's in dire need of improvement. So, sadly enough, we get Dana Brooke, but we don't get Bayley or Asuka. Bayley or Asuka or Nia Jax or Carmella. Sad, sad, sad. Or Tessa Blanchard, that's another one. I like Tessa Blanchard. And she can fit perfectly on the main roster. Wouldn't it make sense for her to feud against Charlotte and bring back Tully? There's a rift in the Four Horsemen. Two Hall of Famers at odds with each other as the Four Horsemen. Flair in one corner, Tully in the other. No, you know, no disrespect to Bret Hart, but I tell you what, man, it's tough. I've said this before. It's tough. It is tough to look at, to just witness Bret Hart nowadays. It really is. But Tully, from what I've seen in recent videos, he's in a decent condition. So he has the opportunity, you know, that would be interesting. And plus, you know, we see Bret Hart from time to time. We see him enough. Bringing back a legend that we hardly ever see, that would be a good idea. Come on, Tully. Tully, Tessa, Rick, Charlotte, book it. Dudley's versus the New Day. This is another one. We had three champions lose today against opponents that they're not feuding with. Three champions lose on Raw against opponents they did not feud with. They're not feuding with. Charlotte's not feuding with Paige. Well, Miz is feuding with Sami Zayn, but he wasn't. But now, because Sami Zayn was with Kevin Owens, but now it's going to be a feud. So I guess you can say too strong. But you also have the Dudleys defeating the New Day. They're not feuding with the New Day. Again, disqualification, loss, those are ways, count out. Those are ways to book it as if both parties are still strong. You don't just have someone pin someone who's a champion on Raw. Ridiculous. And then you have Big Cass having an opportunity and not really having an opportunity because he wasn't even in a match. You had Dean Ambrose come out, destroy the coat. That was the end of Raw. That to me was very uneventful. That was a really horrible way to end Raw. The feud is already weird because Ambrose already beat Jericho. And I certainly don't want, you know, a trifecta again. It just, with Jericho and AJ, they fought four times and it really didn't help either one. AJ would have been just as over if he wouldn't have feuded against Jericho and had those win, you know, back and forth wins and losses. If he would have been winning the whole time, he might have even been stronger. But Jericho put over Ambrose. But for some reason, Ambrose's character is so mired and muddy and damaged. Let me put you over a little more. Absolutely ridiculous. And Cass, what was his role in all of this jacket damaging? I'm going to play a bodyguard and make sure that you don't go away from Dean Ambrose, who stole my shine. He came out. He destroyed Jericho. He took my possibility to become this big, you know, main event guy to beat a six-time world champion. Dean Ambrose took that away from me, but I'm going to help out Dean Ambrose. I'm going to help out Dean Ambrose beat up Chris Jericho, who I had an opportunity to defeat. I'm not happy about Dean Ambrose taking that spot away from me. He took a main event spot away from me, but I'm helping him. Please tell me how creatively lousy and inconsistent that is. Very. If I was Big Cass, I would be upset with Dean Ambrose. I would be looking at him. Dude, what are you doing? I have an opportunity to get a prominent spot, a big old spot here in the company as a singles wrestler, and you took it away from me because you're at odds. You have odds with Chris Jericho. So instead of taking it out in the back or somewhere else or in another segment, you're going to interrupt my match and do it. Please tell me how that causes camaraderie. It doesn't to me. Doesn't make sense to me at all. Very uneventful ending. Flavor of the week coming up.
It is now time for the Flavor of the Week.
As we spoke about, the Flavor of the Week is going to be ranking the least to best people managed by Teddy Long, as we are celebrating the interviewing presence of Teddy Long. We're going to have our Flavor of the Week about Teddy Long. Before we do that, next week, be sure to join us live. We are having former WWE World Heavyweight Champion Paul London on the show. I'm really, really excited about that. Paul London will be on the show live next week. So please be sure to stay tuned for that. Other opportunities coming up, just approaching, and I'll certainly let you know about that. I mean, we're booked, and you know, we have interviews for like the next 5 or 6 weeks. So please be sure to join us. Continue to support the Pancakes and Power Slam show. This is the place to be on Tuesday nights. So we should get into the flavor of the week, shall we? Teddy Long, man. I was so happy to have him on the show. I've been wanting him on the show for quite some time now. And it was to have him. I've always respected his work. I've always thought that Teddy Long was just really a example of working hard to get to a prominent spot. That's what I've been doing for years now. I mean, just continuing to pitch to different, you know, big places and big sites and big opportunities, and it worked. It started off with just a vision and being able to accept no. That's what it started off with. And now I write for two companies that I absolutely adore. I actually spoke to the editor of Fox Sports right at the beginning of the show for some ideas coming up the pike. So that's exciting. So be sure to stay tuned for that. And, of course, I got some more Sports Illustrated articles up the pike as well. Follow Crave Wrestling at Crave Wrestling Facebook. Crave Wrestling, Twitter, at Crave Wrestling. Follow. Subscribe to the Pancakes and Power Slam show on iTunes, ladies and gentlemen. I counted like 30-something, almost 40 interviews that we've had. Like the first year, we had like a couple. But after that, just the influx of interviews. And now we're up to many a month, and it's going to continue that way because of your support and just your dedication to listen to the show. This became a go-to place for interviews. I've always enjoyed the Where Are They Now segments of everything. I like interviewing people who aren't affiliated necessarily with WWE or TNA or ROH. Well, ROH is cool, but mainly WWE and TNA. Because with WWE, you want to say something, but you can't. As we saw with Ziggler a few years ago, he was punished for that. Ryback wanted to say something. Obviously, Ryback wanted to say something because he blogged about it. And I'm sure that didn't happen. I'm sure that blog wasn't because of like a week or two of stuff. I'm sure that was pent up frustration from years ago. And it showed very well. It showed very much on his blog that he's been holding that for years. It seems like it's been pent up for quite some time. So with Ryback, we'll see where he goes, man. Lucha Underground, team up with Brian Cage, dominate the whole. Please give me credit for that if that happens. All right, so let's go through the least to the best people managed by Teddy Long. Now, you know, he did a hop, skip, and a jump with a few of these, and that's why they're lower on the list. But it really goes by their level of overness, Teddy Long being with them. Now, if he's plugged into a wrestler who was not over before he managed them, and it's not his fault, and they just aren't over during or after he managed them, they're going to be lower on the list. So here we go. So I wrote 17 down. Now, you know, he's wrestled, you know, he's managed like 10, man, you know, the 10 Team Teddy and all that. I'm not going to write those people down. If he was actually a manager for them, that's who I wrote down. Now, I might be missing some. But if I'm missing them, they're probably lower on the list because they weren't really known for being managed by Teddy Long. So number 17 goes to Joey Max. Jumping Joey Max. I was a big Jumping Joey Max fan as a kid. And as a, yeah, I was a kid, 10 probably, 10, 11. Jumping Joey Max. Unfortunately, Joey Max was, I believe he's passed on now. I think he's passed away. I think he passed away some years ago. But Jumping Joey Max, I was a big fan. Unfortunately, with Teddy Long, I mean, he didn't really do anything for him. Joey Max was never over. 2006 is when he died. So it's been almost 10 years since he died. October 15th, 2006. He was 47. He was, yeah, wait. I think he was the 37, excuse me. He was young. Unfortunately. Yeah, so Jumping Joey Max, yeah, he was never over anyways, unfortunately. And, you know, Teddy Long with him didn't do much. It was a good attempt to make him more important, but he was that uberly hyper baby face that the kids love, and I was one of those kids. Powers is the next one. He was like that too with the Young Stallions. And when he went to the WCW, they tried to give him some personality. You know, he's always had the look. He's been chiseled from stone when he was in the WWE with the Young Stallions. With Paul Roma. But, yeah, Jim Powers is another one that just, unfortunately, was never over. Could have been with the Young Stallions. I think that they're a tag team that the WWE definitely missed out on. It was only, I think it was like 87, 89. They had an opportunity to really push the Young Stallions. But, unfortunately, they didn't. Missed opportunity there. As Teddy mentioned on the interview, Hard Work Bobby Walker is the next one, number 15. And I put him in this position only because there was not the result of him being managed by Terry Long was not good. However, it had so much opportunity to be good. Because like I said, Hard Work Bobby Walker had a pretty nice build to him. He had an opportunity to become someone, but he mostly had his, you know, he mostly camped on WCW Saturday night. That was mostly where he camped, unfortunately. And they didn't really have much to do with them. Hard Work Bobby Walker. Next, Mark Jindrak, just because it was toward Teddy Long's latter days of managing, and it didn't really make much of an impact. Next, same with Rosie. He's next, but not much of an impact. Rosie's at number 13. Number 12, Norman the Lunatic. I put him as 12 as opposed to like 15 or 16 or 17 because when he was in the WCW, Norman the Lunatic actually had a decent character. Bastion Booger was absolutely horrible. Garly, stinky, yucky. But Norman the Lunatic actually was a decent type of character. Kind of reminded me of Evad Sullivan. That's a name I threw out there for all you wrestling scholars. Evad Sullivan.
Norman Lunatic, yeah, decent. Ice Train, I'll put as next. Because Ice Train being managed by Teddy Long was probably the best thing that happened for Ice Train. Unfortunately, Ice Train was not very important any of his career. Fire and Ice was okay with him and Scott Norton. That could have been something, but it wasn't. It was awkward to see Norton as a face anyways. It could have worked, but it was awkward to see Norton as a face. He's such a brute, muscle-bound, musclehead, just huge, freakish of a stature person. It's really hard to put him as a baby face. As you saw with Vicious and Delicious, his team with Bagwell actually wasn't that bad. But Ice Train, not so much. Ice Train had some potential. He was just so stiff. He really needed to improve his in-ring work substantially. But I had a soft spot for Ice Train for some reason. His theme song in WWE was absolutely generically funny as well. YouTube Ice Train's theme song. It was very interesting. Next, I put Bagwell and Scorpio. There was some tag team success with Bagwell and Scorpio. And when they were managed by Teddy Long, it was helpful to send them as a team. So I'll give them that. One Man Gang is next, just because One Man Gang, throughout his entire career, he was an important, just about throughout the entire of his career, he was just a big name. One Man Gang was a big name. He was the man. Great gimmick. Great, great gimmick. And when you call yourself a one man gang, you've got a standard to fill there. And he definitely did that. I'll put Rodney Mack as 8 and D'Lo as 7. We'll kind of put them together. But I put D'Lo over Rodney Mack just because D'Lo had a further career. And being with Teddy Long actually helped the both of them. But I've said before, even when I interviewed D'Lo, Thuggin' and Buggin' Enterprises, I didn't have time to talk to Teddy about that. But if we bring him back on the show, I'll definitely talk about that. I'll definitely ask him about that. Thuggin' and Buggin' Enterprises. Oh, that was just horrible. There were some white boy challenges that I found very funny, though. The one when Goldberg destroyed Rodney Mack, that was pretty memorable and pretty funny. Jazz, I'll put in that as well as 6. Johnny B. Badd is 5. Mark Henry, 4th. Sergeant Craig Pitbull Pittman as 3rd. Just because this guy was just a relative nobody that would wrestle, and come in. That code red arm breaker was vicious, though. And he would come out, Marine Corps! Arr! Structure of his mouth was very interesting as well. But when he turned heel, was managed by Teddy Long, and he really had a pretty decent push in the WCW for a little bit. Number 2, Skyscrapers. And number 1, Doom. I think that's pretty evident. Those two was the best teams that Teddy Long managed, and they were very, very well and saw great success by being managed from Teddy Long. Ladies and gentlemen, always a pleasure. We're having fun here on the Pancakes of Power Slam Show, episode 215. Next week, we have Paul London. Follow us at Crave Wrestling on Twitter, Crave Wrestling Facebook page. Subscribe to the iTunes channel, Pancakes and Power Slams. Follow us throughout the week on Facebook Live on Monday night after Raw. Thank you all. Until next week, enjoy your week of wrestling, and God bless. Goodbye.